Welcome to Paid DLC, the DLC bonus show that is for our patrons. You, our patrons. Actually, this one is going out on the full feed. Welcome. If you're listening to this and you're not a patron, please consider becoming one. This is usually exclusive to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But today, I'm here with Christian Spicer. And
hello.
Our...
Oh, no, I was jumping in to say hello.
Well, say hello, Christian. Hey. Hi, Christian. How are you?
I'm fine. Go ahead. Keep going.
That's okay. And our regular, semi-regular, often an awesome friend slash guest slash third chair, Lana Bashinsky is back with us. Hey, Lana.
Woo. Hi. It honestly feels like illegal to be back here so soon. I know this is going to be like the norm, but it's so much fun. I feel like I'm like doing some sneaky by just being here. So I'm
no, you're going to be, it's going to be our regular midweek check-in now with Lana. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But the reason this episode is going out in the main feed is because we thought rather than our usual sort of just hanging out, talking about whatever, answering quick questions and the more casual bonus show format that we've been doing, we'd actually delay one day to be able to talk about the Summer Games Fest presentation that literally just concluded minutes ago. We all watched the two-hour presentation, Jeff Keighley on stage at the Summer Games Fest. Oh, I guess I need to play this.
It's the Summer of Games on DLC. You're gonna get hyped up and the news will live up to your expectations.
You know what? Maybe the most accurate year of that bumper. We will see. We will see what everybody thinks. But yeah, we thought we'd put this out in the main feed for folks that aren't patrons because there's so much to talk about in this Summer of Games Fest week. I heard folks calling it Jeff Key 3. we don't get an E3 anymore. But although they promised. Next year, we promise we'll be back. We'll see, E3. We'll see. But right now, we've got Summer of Games, and there's so much to talk about. We'll be talking about the Xbox show and all the other stuff on Monday. So we thought, why not delay one day and talk about the Summer of Games showcase? Now, haven't had a lot of time to process this. Like I said, minutes ago, it ended. It was 2 hours, game after game after game after game. But Lana, let's just talk broad terms. What did you think?
Well, broad terms, I think the first thing I have to express is generally my disappointment, because as somebody who really likes a close quarter sci-fi game that's like kind of like horrifying or thrilling, there really wasn't anything here for me. So
yeah. It's a bummer. It's a bummer. If only somebody would make a derelict space station that I can explore that might have horrors to uncover.
This is my plea. This is my plea to the world.
What if you want those horrors to be like, something like grotesque?
Ooh, now you're talking, man. if only somebody would make that game. I mean, horror in general, big presence at the show. It's just, there was a lot of horror. And, you know, Jeff Keighley, friend of the show, he's been on DLC, I think, more than once. He's been doing this a long time. He knows how to produce a show. I think a lot of him. I think very highly of him. I do not understand the idea to group like games together so tightly like this.
I feel maybe it's like car places, car stores. What are they called? Where do you buy a car?
You got it right the first
dealerships,
time. Car places,
dealership. Car places. But they like group them all together because you know it's easy for you to like shop around really quick. There were so many. Maybe the idea is like, if you had it like every second game is this space horror game, does that feel less repetitive? Does that feel more repetitive? I also just like from my own experience with GDC and like trying to pull content to put together something for like an animation summit, like some years, like that, those are the games people are making. Like you can't necessarily avoid that as the person who's running the show. You can reach out to people and you're like, give me your best stuff. I'm here to elevate your your project. I'm here to show you off in the best possible light. And if everybody's like, this is our best project, Jeff Keighley can't be like, do you have like a different one? Like, that's unfortunately not something he gets to do.
You make a great point. Yeah, I mean, this is the game. These are the games that people are making. And it reminds me of those years, you know, just a few years ago where, you know, every game was a zombie game or every game was a survival game. It does feel like there are games that are genres or subgenres in the zeitgeist that just everybody decided to make a few years ago. And now they're all coming to roost. But I still don't understand why, as a producer of an event like this, you wouldn't try to pepper those through and break up. You know, it felt exactly what you're talking about with the car dealership analogy, or like, you know, at Target or Walmart, you go to the home goods section and all the home goods are next to each other. It just felt like Jeff was like, well, you know, people are super into space horror, Dead Space like games. Maybe they'll only want to watch this 5 minutes of show, you know, just cram them all in the same department and then just departmentalize our presentation. I
was trying to Google it. This, my econ 201, I don't know, some econ professor, one of my biz professors from college is going to be upset with me right now. But like, there's a name for that economic principle, and like the basic way of doing it or of thinking about it is, if you're on a beach and you have a whatever you're selling, right, popsicle stand, you're going to be, it doesn't matter where you are, you're probably going to be in the middle of the beach to get the most people. And then if you're another popsicle stand that comes onto the beach, where are you going to set up shop? Anywhere else that's not right next to that popsicle stand, you're at a disadvantage for other customers. Because if you're on the, you'd be like, oh, I want to be on the other end to be away from that one. Well, then you're 90% further from everybody else on that half of the beach. So it's why you end up right next to each other. It's why McDonald's spends millions of dollars on market research for where they're going to put their next building. And then Burger King just buys one next door. Like, that's, you know, why that approach happens in games though, like this, it felt weird because unless you are trying to call a direct comparison to them, like shopping, it makes sense because you're actively going to buy that thing. So yes, you want all the rock. Yeah.
You're going to test, you're going that day to test drive the cars. You want to be able to go to one dealership, then another dealership, then another dealership. Yeah.
Yes. And in this, I feel like, you know, maybe Lana, what you said is accurate, where it was like, you couldn't space them out because it was just, it's all there was.
All there is space.
Derelict space. Then I feel like you can call it out in a way, like make that part of the presentation. We have a fantastic list of games for you today. Maybe you make some comment about the state of the world, and you know, a lot of the games were you make that part of the narrative of the show you're doing. And
I guess, but you know, it's about relationships with those devs too. And you don't want, I can't imagine that you can sort of even
jab at it.
Yeah. It feels like you're denigrating one game if you're saying it looks like another game, even if it's obvious to everybody that they look the same.
Well, the thing I wish I saw more, and maybe seeing all this back to back to back will be a reason that, like, or a motivating thing in seeing more of the gameplay stuff. Because when you got into the gameplay of things, even though it's very similar, there are things that stuck out to me about some of the particular games. The Aliens announcement, I could take or leave the actual trailer, but then the very end, it's like this little tiny thing of gameplay that's like, oh, it's isometric. Is that co-op? And then it's like gone. And I'm like, oh, like, what if I saw more of that? What about the Callisto Protocol? Like the cool environmental, like, oh, I can kick this gross thing into a fan and it splattered everywhere. Like the environmental, like the use of the terrain as part of like your weaponry at your disposal. That's interesting. But just the gritty, it's been 10 days. This was our mission. It's like, oh, okay.
You're so right, Lana. That's such a great point. That I understand if you're in not to use a pun, but if you're in a vacuum and you are your head's down, your blinders are on, you're making your game, you're excited. Keighley knocks on your door, is like, hey, can I have a trailer to put in my Summer Games Fest presentation? You're like, yes. What we got to do is we got to describe our game. So what is our game? Ooh, our game is you wake up and you're on a space station and no one can hear you scream, and uh-oh, there's dangers around every corner. I get it. I get that that's you're like, we got to lay out the concept of our universe and our, and what's scary about our world is that you're alone and it's a space station. There's no one there. I totally understand that blind spot of like, we have to start from zero and tell people about what this experience is. But, and not knowing that literally everybody is doing it that way all around you in the presentation isn't your fault, but it is a bummer from our perspective as the audience when you go, I had exactly the same experience you had, Lana, where at the end of that Aliens trailer, I was like, oh, wow, cool. It is ice. Whoa. Okay. Yeah. And so all those differences to be accentuated would have been so refreshing and really let those games stand out from each other. I'll just read off. So Aliens Dark Descent. I wrote Aliens Dark Descent. And then I wrote dash top down shooter. I was like, what? Callisto Protocol right after that. Then we have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, which, you know, not in space, but known quantity. Flashback 2, which we'll talk about. I don't know if any of you guys were fans of the original Flashback, but that was actually kind of a cool, interesting trailer, the way all the images were reflected on the thing. Fort Solace, Routine, and then Stormgate even had some of that, although that game is going to be very, very different. So you have at least five games crammed all together that are all in the, and I thought Fort Solace looked cool. I thought Routine looked cool. But like, if you showed me right now those trailers without the names on them, I'm not sure I'd be able to match the right one. You know how in grade school you'd have the two columns, you had to draw lines between what was, I'm not sure I would be able to do it completely accurately because it just was all crammed together and none of it had an identity that really stood out. And we are also getting the Dead Space remake, which was not at the show, but it just feels like everybody wants to remake Dead Space. We even had Troy Baker come on stage and be like, this game is like Dead Space meets. I was like, don't say it. Don't say it. We already, you
know. We know, actually. We already, it's so funny. Beside all of my notes, I wrote like Dead Space question mark, Dead Space question mark. And then for Routine, I wrote Dead Space Snap.
I know you will appreciate this, Lana, as a Canadian. When I saw Poutine come up, I was like, Poutine? Did somebody make a game called Poutine?
And it's about like gritty space photography?
Are you photographing cheesy French fries?
Oh my gosh.
I feel like, Jeff, you, like going to my elementary school matchup, you mentioned Stormgate. And I'll use that as the example, but I couldn't match up name to genre. As Lana mentioned for the Alien game, that it was it's like isometric, first-person shooter, RTS, just what is, what is, because based on what the trailers are shown, like Stormgate, I know I had heard about that game, and it's from devs that came off of Blizzard, and this, that, and the other, but you watch that advertisement, I won't even call it a trailer, the cinematic, and I was like, I have no idea what this game is, and then they walked up for the little interview and they're like, we're redefining the RTS. I was like, oh, it's an RTS.
It looked, I was like, for half a second, I was like, is that StarCraft Ghost?
So that was the thing about Frostgiant again, like thinking about like, oh, if only you could show more of the gameplay as part of the trailer. They had like this pretty, like they're in like the dungeon, and it's like, you know, the demons fighting this girl. It's like kind of gritty. But then like they cut to the gameplay images. And it was like bright on a beach with like the stylized skull in the water. And I was like, this is cute.
Yeah.
And I know maybe cute is not the word that they're looking for, but like stylistically interesting in a way that I feel like was not well reflected in their trailer.
Yes.
I just wish, like, because the gameplay, the innovations that these teams are making, that's going to be the part that's really the hook. And I wish, I don't know if it's like the, I mean, there's marketing geniuses out there who must know better than I do why it continues
ring,
to be this.
Ring, 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 ring.
Oh, God.
Oh, my ring, gosh.
I tried to lose our number, the show's ring. Hotline, but I think Mark ring. From marketing has found it. Hello, Mark, are you there? Yeah, Mark?
My ears were burning when I heard marketing genius. I was like, someone is talking about Mark Edding, the genius. So I'm here to answer any questions that Lunine might have for me. So fire when ready, and I got this. Go ahead, Mark Edding, genius at your disposal. Go ahead. Wow.
Always such a professional, Mork. Was it?
It's Mark Edding. It's actually funny because it sounds like marketing, which is funny because that's what I do. And I'm also a genius, not a marketing genius, but I'm Mark Edding, a genius. Right.
Yeah, Mark, can you explain why so many of these games look so similar?
Great question. Why did these games look so similar? I do want to answer that question, but first, you're alone. You've woken up. You get out of bed.
Mark, we're losing you.
You're in a space. No, it's because the connection was bad because I was in space. I don't know, man. It's wild.
Yeah. So I think actually, Lama, yet again, you make an awesome point that I want to underscore because we have talked on DLC over and over. I keep bringing up this pattern that we see over and over again of, you know, it's obvious to everybody. First, you get the announcement. Maybe you get a logo. Then you get the cinematic trailer. Then you get the gameplay reveal. Then, you know, it's like it's very much set in stone, this marketing pattern. And I've often tried to bring up this notion that at least to me, it's kind of starting to grate on me a bit, the consistency of it. And I think what you just brought up, for the first time, maybe bringing into focus why. And I think it's that too often, not every time, but too often, the cinematic trailer part of the reveal isn't really representative of the tone or feel of what you'll actually be doing. That it's trying to convey this sense of drama and excitement and give you this insight into the world of the game. But it doesn't really convey the feeling of playing the game. And I think that's a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what feels so exhausting about it. It's like, well, I still don't have any sense of what this really is. I have a sense of sort of the universe that we're talking about and maybe some characters that we're talking about here. But I don't have a sense of what I'm actually going to feel while I'm playing it. And I think that's a failure in marketing.
Yeah.
I think it can even go a step further to that point where not to just harp on one game, on Stormgate over and over again, but I feel like the feeling of playing that game and isn't close to that sentiment. The feeling of playing a game like The Last of Us or Uncharted or Tomb Raider, I think can be conveyed in that story-driven, narrative-based trailer because it's a story-driven, narrative-based game. But, like, that type of trailer would feel wrong for Fortnite because that's not a game that Lana and I play together now. that feels disingenuous in the way that I think Fortnite has done a good job of their trailers being, like, they almost poke fun at it at times where it's like the world's coming to an end and then it pans over and there's a banana and a tuxedo, like, flossing. It's like, oh, yes, this is a Fortnite-appropriate trailer. And then, like, a bus crashes or whatever. But some of these trailers, it just seemed like that's not the RTS experience, you know? Like, is that marketing message that can convey the act of what I'd be doing should I buy your game?
Yeah. Well, I will say, too, like, just in Frost Giant's defense, I think that, you know, at least like understanding coming from like the StarCraft universe, a lot of StarCraft developers, like that's like a sort of, you know, cornerstone RTS title, that the cinematics aren't representative of the gameplay, but they are representative of your experience, at least going through the campaign. Like these cinematics are these huge moments in the game where you're basically like finishing levels to get the cinematic. It's like your reward for completing each sort of step on these journeys. So I, you know, some of these devs coming from StarCraft, I could see that being a big part of it. But seeing that this is like our first look at the game and not knowing if there is a campaign, maybe they've announced it. I don't know much about the project other than what we saw today. But if there is a campaign, can we expect cinematics like that as a reward, a la StarCraft?
Yeah.
For me, yeah. it wasn't like the cinematic trailer. I always want a gameplay trailer. I just always do. The cinematic trailer, that one specifically tonally, I just like, even if the colors were brighter, like the stills mm-hmm. from the game, I just wish even the, like the specifics of the art direction were specifically reflections of those stills that they showed us afterwards.
Right.
And I also want to mention that I didn't think it was poorly done. It was a bit of a mismatch. Right.
It wasn't bad. It just didn't feel, it just felt like a whiplash to look at those screenshots and go, oh, that's not anything I was expecting mm-hmm. looking at that cinematic trailer. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing that you described with the Aliens, Aliens Derelict? Descent. Excuse me. Aliens.
Not Fire Team. Not the aliens, other Aliens.
Aliens. Descent.
Dirty Old. Yeah,
it was the same thing
station.
Where they show that snippet of gameplay, as you said, and it was like this whiplash of, oh, I was not expecting that at all. And I think that's a bad reaction to have, especially when the little snippet or the little screenshot is way more interesting than the trailer.
Yeah.
You know? I'm genuinely excited about Stormgate because I love those old RTSs that are now old. But it's one thing if you're announcing like StarCraft 2, which is a known quantity, and then you show mm-hmm. this cinematic trailer and you're like, I know what I'm expecting, but now you're giving me sort of details of that world. But like you said, it's a larger project than that, right? It's the project of marketing in this case. The larger project of marketing here is mm-hmm. a new IP, what to expect from it at all.
Yeah, there's definitely like a whole world, like especially like as an artist who works in AAA that I don't know about that must have to do with like, oh, like getting funding. Like they're an indie studio. What does that look like? Maybe they have to have these touch point reveals to make sure that there is like a consistent stream of funding. Like I don't know how that stuff works. I assume it's all intertwined.
Yeah.
I just, you know, speaking as a gamer, it's just not quite what I want to see.
It is. And again, interesting. I'm excited about Stormgate and we keep harping on that game, but it is interesting to me that you have these former Blizzard, former StarCraft developers. And man, it looks like somebody went, what if StarCraft, but also Diablo? Like, do we have to not have Diablo in the StarCraft game? Because let's put demons in it too, which, you know, all right, let's do it. I'm in.
I wonder if games now are just so big and can often make so much money if you do it right. You know, we saw the billions that COD has made across its releases that came out relatively recently. And we're seeing that we saw the ZZZ Genshin Impact next game and how many billions that other Genshin Impact has made.
I mean, and but quick aside though, you know, you're setting yourself up for everybody saying ZZZ is like, it's boring because it's like sleeping is the abbreviation for sleeping, right? We know that going in that the internet is going to do to your title, right? Okay.
Yeah. Well, so you're just going to use the boring sleeping guy emoji as the shorthand.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Christian.
And I wonder if it's just so big that. And a lot of the marketing has become stale because of that, where it doesn't feel like it needs to break through or do something largely different. It can just fall on these kind of established patterns of this is what it is. And I know that we're spending a lot of time talking about marketing, but also I think that's what this show is. Like, yeah. We're not talking about the games. We're talking about how they were presented to us and what we know about the games. And I feel like there needs to be a shakeup in how this stuff is done. And I think in terms of even the inside joke, air quote, of release dates, you know, we've talked a lot about it on this show and it's like inevitable. You see the release date, then you see the delay, then you see the next release date. And then online, you'll see some people like the vitriol from people that are upset because of the delay. And then the pushback from people that think the vitriol is too much and you don't want crunch, do you? And it's like, well, no, of course I don't want crunch, but also this company spent 4 months of my life hyping me up for this thing and now they've changed it. And it just seems like it's in this cycle of
predictability
of a bad thing. Yeah, yeah. Yes, that also.
Well, I wonder if some of that in particular is a product. So with the way the game development works and as part of like the sort of fallout from the pandemic and how development teams have had to sort of change through that, I assume that this is something that was felt on many, many jobs, not just game development, but there was always this feeling that it was temporary. You know, at first it's like we're sending you home for 2 weeks, then we're sending you home for 2 months, and sort of putting off the problems of like solving the issues that would make people not have to push release dates and not have to like announce things and be like, at some point, you know, our announcement is we think it will come out eventually. Yeah. I think for the last couple of years, solving the problems that would allow those workflows to be refined to like stick their targets to more confidently announce things, that's been like pushed back. And now that the reality is kind of like more companies are going remote, offering remote, like leaning into like figuring out strategies to be more efficient in this new space, hopefully we'll see things get a little bit more back on track. And that, you know, to use a metaphor I've heard you both say on the show before, it's not like, hopefully we can trust the weatherman again, that when he says it's going to rain, right, we know it's going to rain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that when we usually cover events like this, I usually step through the games one by one. We talk about all the games, and it kind of bums me out to not do that this time. But it also feels like the more pertinent conversation is how samey it all felt to me, and how this show felt like a bit of a letdown because there was no big standout thing. All the games just sort of washed into one another, and we'll get to the, I mean, there are exceptions to that, and we will talk about specific games, but it does feel like the more pertinent conversation is these sort of macro level discussions of like, what are we looking at here? Well, and maybe that's just me. I think that the three of us are kind of on the same page about that. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd love to hear from listeners that disagree, that think that it was a great show, but it just didn't feel like it had much identity or clarity. It just felt like this monotonous procession of very samey looking things that all failed to kind of impress any sense of specialness.
So I'm wondering, and I've been trying to remember how it was last year. Is this the second or third year of Summer of Games?
Oh, it's been longer than that. I think he's been doing it 4 or 5, maybe.
First year was 2020.
It was?
Are you sure? I believe so.
He was with E3, and he had his Keighley stage, and then they broke up, and then E3 kept going, but he did a different thing. Mm. I don't know. I will look it up.
Well, one of the flat circle.
One of the things I'm trying to think about is, I know that like the first Summer of Games, I remember it was like, oh my gosh, there's like news every week, but it was kind of like individual little drops. I'm wondering if this is like, this was like a big stream, but there is that other stream happening on Sunday. Like that's going to be big.
The Xbox One, I think, will be significant.
Were they always chunked out like that? Or is it like growing pains now that like, now that more and more people, like now that E3 is definitely not happening again this year, or it hasn't happened this year and is definitely going to quote unquote happen next year. We'll see. It seems like maybe there's like so much content that now it's like being spread out through the whole summer in these larger sections that maybe we're waiting for like a big crescendo rather than a huge kickoff. It's like a medium tier kickoff, and then to keep people invested, maybe some, like, he's saving the bigger announcements for later in the summer. I don't really know what his strategy is.
I think that there may be a lot of truth to that, in that things are less, it doesn't feel like E3 where everything is concentrated and you just have so many amazing things to talk about, that maybe it does, maybe because things are being spread out through the year, that there's less, you know, one of the things I texted to Christian while we were watching this was like, this kind of feels like the table scraps of other presentations. It feels like Keighley got, I mean, there's a lot of games here and I'm sure a lot of them are going to be great, but it just didn't feel like the show had a lot of big beats, and it didn't feel like it was paced well. It didn't feel like the games got their just due because of how they were grouped together. And it's never felt like it packed a punch. And that really bums me out, because I didn't come away from it feeling, you know, very excited about anything in particular. But maybe that's a good transition point to talk about games that stood out.
We're excited about.
Yeah, yeah. So, Lana, do you have a game or two that would be at the top of your list from all? I think there was like 30 or 40 games that were talked about over the course of this 2-hour presentation. So there's a lot there, but anything that stood out to you?
So there's a couple of things that stood out to me. I'll talk about the games that I like to sec, but one of the first things that stands out to me and is always about the show that I love seeing is just seeing other people just geek out about being near Jeff Keighley. And like, Jeff is such a professional. People, in my brain, his inner monologue is great. Back on track. We got to keep running. We have a show to get. We have to have this much time to get it. And people are like, I just want to say, I think you're so great. And he's like, great. How's your game? Like, he's so good at just like deflecting off that moment of people just wanting to like praise him into talking about the games. I love seeing that. Both his professionalism and people's excitement about this thing that he's doing and who he
Jeff,
is.
Jeff, your jacket is so shiny.
Oh my gosh. But one of the games that really stuck in my brain is Witchfire, which was the first person shooter and was like purely gameplay. Like, it started off with like that, like it looked like some kind of little musket or something that the character's kind of rotating around, but like really cool abilities, interesting sort of fantasy world plus pseudo modern looking guns and then magic spells and things. It also gave me sort of a God of War vibe just with like the types of enemies and how they spawned in and kind of like that fiery, like stringy fiery effects, and then suddenly you're a whole bunch of enemies around you. It just looked really fun and dynamic, and I think it stood out because it was one of the only fantasy games that was presented.
What a strange thing in a year, you know, when usually it's the other way around where fantasy games are wall to wall and you get one or two space games. We're just kind of in the pendulum swinging the other direction, but
but also because it was like a purely gameplay and like super well paced, I felt like it was really well cut together. The ending fell a little flat where you're like, oh, I'm walking up to this rock. What's going to happen? Oh, I'm getting killed. But I don't know. It definitely enticed me enough to pick it up whenever it's released.
Yeah, it was crazy when Jeff introed that game. He's like, we announced this game 5 years ago and they've been working on it the whole time. It's like, how do these small developers stay funded for that long without a product? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that announcement and the now release, I wrote down like, oh, this looks interesting, but also Tiny Tina's, like it was announced before Tiny Tina's. And then since it was announced, Tiny Tina's has come out and been excellent.
Yeah.
And now this game is still yet to come out. And it seems like it kind of is that same genre of shooting power. Mm-hmm. That I'm curious how it will establish its own thing. Like, how many guns and how many powers are there? My kids were like, oh, there's a fifth power. There's another power. Actually, I want to pause on that too, because we didn't talk about this up top. I texted you this, Jeff. I realize that a lot of video games are rated M for mature. I realize that this had a warning at the beginning, like this is for mature audiences, blah, blah, blah. I wish that these things, even though they are on the internet, much like our show, I wish that they could be more family friendly. I want to be able to watch, like, my kids judge me as a parent. My oldest watched most of it with me, and then a few games she chose to turn around. And I'd be like, hey, this is going to be scary and grotesque. You can watch it if you want to. Just pretend. Or she's like, I don't want to watch this. And I was like, I understand. But I feel like, I don't know if there's the TV trailer version of it that we could show, but it kind of bums me out that the big things of the year that are of the hobby, like one of my favorite things in the world, I can't really share with my kids in that way. And I know it's a parent's problem, but anyway, just wanted to make that.
Or that the show like puts that foot forward. Like that the first thing we start off with is the most violent and gory stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe ease me into it. Take me to dinner first. You know what I'm saying?
Or even have like the section that is like the mature section, but maybe then you'd like pretty flawlessly have like a sameness section every year if you did it that way. But that was actually one of the things that really surprised me up front was like, all right, here's a trailer now with more gore. And I was like, great. Cool.
That was a funny way for him to intro that Callisto Protocol. When he's like, we got the version with more gore. Okay, buckle in. Awesome. So Christian, do you have a game that stood out to you to start things off?
Yeah, I mean, the next one, so the first one I wrote down was Witchfire, and then the next one is Shredder's Revenge.
Well, that was a long time later, my friend.
What? You said the Ninja Turtles one?
Oh, my cap's not in this view, is it? Well, to be perfectly honest, the biggest thing this week was in the show was an actual, which feels weird to say, an actual advertisement in the middle of the show full of advertisements. Like the biggest thing this week and shown again as an ad in the middle of the show of ads is the Xbox Samsung streaming partnership.
Yeah, like, that was pretty huge. We had heard rumors
about the dongle not happening and this, that, and the other. And it was released to press earlier today. But the idea of their partnership was currently just Samsung 2022 TVs, that Game Pass will be an app on that, much like Stadia and anything else. And they're looking to roll it out to other TVs. And they're also talking about later, I think they said this year, that games that you select, games that you own that aren't part of Game Pass, will get cloud enabled as well to expand that catalog to other games. And they showed that again as an ad break in the middle of the otherwise show of trailers. And I think that's the biggest news to have come out today. That is, a generational push forward of Xbox's cloud technology and the future, cross that out, present of cloud gaming. It's showing a competence in it. Xbox still positions it as a secondary or perhaps tertiary, if you have the X, the S, and then cloud, like way to play games, but a commitment to it in a big way. And it's like any controller, DualSense, we don't, hook up your controller and play. That felt huge. But yeah, the games I'm picking out, Shredder's Revenge.
My other favorite game that was there was also the Papa John's 2-for-1 pizza advertisement. Talking favorite.
Yeah, but really gory trailer for that.
It was so gory.
When Shaq opened up that crust and the pepperoni got ripped in half.
Oh, it's too much. Oh. When they, that part where they threw that pizza right into the fan and it just destroyed the pizza.
My daughter thought both looked like ketchup, though. So, I'm safe. It's okay. No nightmare.
And no marinara was hurt in this making of this.
The zombie just went right for the pizza's throat and just ripped it out.
Anyway, sorry, Shredder's Revenge.
Shredder's Revenge, six-player co-op, which my reaction to was, it's too much. It's too much. There's too much going on screen.
Even on screen, it was, yeah.
It looks like, I mean, having played a lot of those games in my youth, the four-player, it's often too much with just four people trying to smack a bad guy. It's like, it's six? It's two.
Okay, we got 1, 2, 3. No, that's all I got. That's the number of people I could game with. Yeah. And it ends there.
I don't have that. The organizational requirements alone are too big.
Got to teach my dog how to play. Like, yeah. It's like, how am I going to get six people to play this game with me? Oh, it's going to be me alone playing it by myself.
You're going to take the time to write, the AI that's going to control the other five characters, play by yourself with all the friends you created.
Yeah, and Christian, that's what we got. What seven a week? It comes out in a week from today.
It does, which also is kind of unfortunately leaked with another listing before the show. But I love that we hadn't known the release date. We had seen stuff about the game. This is a game that hasn't been delayed yet, Jeff. So you have 1 week to be right. Shredder's Revenge.
Just wait.
You have 1 week. I think it looks great. It continues to look great. They add. They've shown new characters. This was Casey. And I think it's interesting how they all play differently. At least it looks like it. Splinter is slower. April's faster. Casey Jones also looked a little faster and a little more frenetic in the way they moved around the screen. I think they're doing everything right with this game from what they're showing and how it looks. So I'm stoked. It was by far, we'll get to the end, but of the other games, of games I've yet to play,
yeah,
my biggest, most hyped game of the show.
My pick is Metal Hellsinger. Mm. No, I'm kidding. I'm just joking. I'm kidding. I'm sure that game's going to be great. And it's going to have a great audience. It's just not.
You talked about that other rhythm game, and I was like, oh, Jeff really wants to see this genre push forward. Like,
okay. Stay in the rhythm to the guy going.
Yeah. I feel like that game would be very appealing to me, except I like metal music. Like the talent of metal music is so out of this world. I don't love the growly vocals. If it were just like the System of the Down guy, like singing, or, and this is going to be so insulting, But if you could like turn off the vocals and just have like the double kick drum and like
it's called Doom. Guitar. It's Doom Eternal,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. 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 With the beat mechanic, I do think would be fun and interesting to play through, but I don't think I could handle that much of it. I'm a big baby, I guess.
Yeah, I don't mean to dog that game. I'm sure it's going to be awesome. There's going to be a whole audience that's going to dig it, but I just thought it was funny. My actual pick of the game that stood out to me the most is the game called American Arcadia, which I think is just a genius concept. It is this notion of this this city that has been built as a utopia where you are on camera all the time. You know, you're living a Truman Show type life. But then if you step out of line, you are on the run and the city's going to come get you. I don't know for certain, but it certainly appeared that way from what they showed, that it's just this big city, open city, and you're going to have to, you know, sneak / run around it. It's sort of gave me like old GTA 3 vibes, you know, with the car chase bit that they show, but then more kind of sneaking around. And just the design of the city looked really cool, like this kind of utopian, what if an entire city was an arcade game? And I love the aesthetic of it, this sort of retro Atari 2600 box art and all the color palette of it. It really stood out because it looks so different. And I think the idea is really clever, and that could be a really fun game.
I also think that could be really fun. And I think it's interesting that you likened it to GTA, because one of the things I thought of when I was watching it is it would be so cool if there were a mode that had like a social deception game where you could play with a bunch of your friends, like, what is it, GTA Play? I don't know the name of that game. Where you
online,
can, like, just,
GTA Online.
GTA Online, where you can just like, I'm the store clerk. And maybe you log in and it's like, you are just a store clerk. If you see anybody stepping out of line, you got to stop them. And you're like, okay. And then one person or like a couple people in the map at the same time are like, okay, I got to escape. And there's clearly built in this world and like an interesting like story thing that's happening there. Like the person is like, I'm going to get you out, Trevor, or whatever the guy's name
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I immediately was like, how can I play this with my friends?
It looks really cool. Yeah. It's almost like there was that old Assassin's Creed multiplayer thing where it was all about like trying to pretend like you're controlled by AI so that the your friends can't tell that you're a human controlling it. And so all the entire game of it was, you know, just acting dumb and moving in like herky jerky manner so that the people are like, oh, that's clearly the bad AI of the game.
That's funny. Really fun.
So now you both have six friends to play a game with. How convenient. Interesting. Oh, when we're talking Shredder's Revenge, it's like, oh, I don't have any friends. And now it's like, I just want to play this with all my friends. Okay. I see how it is.
To be clear, regarding Shredder's Revenge, I was just pretending to be Jeff for that moment. I'll get down with some friends anytime.
Lana has copious amounts of friends.
I have so many friends. It's like embarrassing, really.
That other game, Nightingale, looks kind of interesting. I'm not really sure what it is exactly, but I liked the aesthetic of it. I thought that it's got this kind of Victorian era technology, you know, steampunky, very Tesla coils with everything. And I don't know.
For the listeners out there who aren't watching the video version, before Jeff said steampunk, he was trying to express it visually by shaking his shoulders back and forth a lot.
You know, the international symbol of steampunk, you know, shaking your shoulders.
And you had to let the audio listeners know, Jeff. They needed to
know
the type of game it was.
I'm looking over this list of games, and there's just so little that...
Well, there's one more that I was excited about. It's not the first time we've seen it. Although, again... One more aside. Was everything a world premiere? World premiere updating information?
That little like jazzy song and the world premiere moving up and down. I was like, you don't need to. We've seen it enough times.
But also like a world premiere of like the third trailer for something. I'm like, okay, I don't know if that counts. Anyway, Neon White. We've seen stuff from, it's like the card-based first-person shooter. Yeah. A speedrunner game that I think looks really interesting. Their tagline is "For freaks by freaks," which I thought was really funny.
It's such a weird way for Jeff to intro. He's like, this is a game about people in hell trying to get to heaven. I'm like, no, this is an awesome like card-based speedrunning. Like, none of the cool things about this game were voiced in your intro to it, you know? because when he's mentioned it, I was like, oh, I don't know. Oh, I remember this game.
Yeah. And they did my favorite thing, which they're like, and the best part is it comes out like a week from now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nice. I don't know if they'd previously announced their release date or not.
It was a world premiere, Lana. So I'm pretty sure they didn't announce it yet.
They better not have, because that was the newest piece of information. Yeah. But June 16th, I'm excited. I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Midnight Suns Express. Oh, sorry. Midnight Suns,
I'm still excited about. I mean, again, but it's like, let's make Venom even more demon-y. Okay. We don't need to, but okay. Sorry, Christian, what were you saying?
Well, another Midnight game, Midnight Fight Express. There's a demo available, which I have downloaded, but I have yet to play. That looked, again, it's a game I've seen before, and it didn't seem to make me want it less or more based off what they showed. But I think it continues to look great. I'm excited to play the demo here when we're done. You know, the game made by one person plus all these other people.
There's a game made by one person. He got a lot of help recently. Like, you just said made by one person. That's not.
It could be made by one person and then still QA'd by other people.
Yeah.
Right? So that's true. And then other people do other things. I don't know.
The cover to Consequences was made by me also, just entirely made by me. And then some other people like use their artistic talent to like actually make it. But then otherwise, I did it all.
You know, I accept. The Midnight Fight Express, I will say, I didn't love this trailer in particular, but that developer, I don't recall their name. But they do great Twitter updates that show all the different like fighting mechanics and stuff like that. So if you like look up that person's Twitter, I think it's like Jacob an even Dwenzel. Better look. Yeah. Jacob Dwenzel, cool. You said?
I'm probably getting the last name wrong, but it's like DZWH something.
I've been following their Twitter for like a long time. And so it's cool to sort of actually see like, oh, the trailer's here. But the actual Twitter updates that they post are really very, very cool and have been really compelling to watch. So if you want more of a taste, go to Twitter.
I wanted to just give a shout out to Goat Simulator 3's trailer, because I'm not into Goat Simulator personally. I haven't played any of the other ones. Maybe they're great, but I haven't really played them. But I just think it's amazing that they committed so hard to the send up of a like, it's such a deep cut to go after Dead Island like that. Like, I mean, I totally get the reference, but there's probably a good number of folks watching this that have no idea what that reference was. And just to commit so hard to referencing something that hasn't come out and was a trailer that, you know, made some waves, but like isn't, it's just a deep cut to
well, I think the beauty of that trailer is that it does cut both ways, because that is the game that my oldest is most excited about. I mean, she was like, oh my gosh, that goat, like every time a goat came on screen and you know, ran amok, she lost it and thought it was the most hilarious thing. So I think knowing what Goat Simulator is and was, or especially became, the memification of, you know, goats making a mess of things, I think it worked really well. And for, you know, olds like us that have watched a million of these presentations, I think it was like a nice, like, wait, was it? They are. They're just doing straight up a one for one.
They need to license. Have you guys seen that TikTok video that's kind of become a meme with the little British like 4-year old that's looking out the window and is like, "That's an effing goat," but she doesn't say effing. She's like, full on says it. You seen that?
No.
Yes.
Oh, they need to license that.
Yeah.
It's like a tiny little kid is looking out this. It's a effing goat. Anyway. All right, so let's talk about the big what would have been a mic drop moment, the big huge end of show reveal that got spoiled hours before the presentation started. They clearly were going to make a big deal about Last of Us, had Neil Druckmann on stage as well as the actors, and it was going to be, I think, a big surprise that a game that has already been remastered is now getting completely remade. So, you know, you don't have to choose between a remaster or a remake. You can do both if you are one of the best games of all time. Christian, as the voice of the official Last of Us podcast and avowed Last of Us super fan, let's talk about it. A lot of Last of Us stuff, still from the TV show. an announcement of this standalone Last of Us multiplayer game, and then the showing off this remake, which is evidently using some pretty high tech stuff to be a PlayStation 5 exclusive. We know it's going to be $70 coming out this year. What's your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it is a bummer of a leak to start there. And not only that, but from your company, but it's like Sony's own whoopsie daisy, which, the folks responsible for that have to feel awful. And I felt like Neil also was very bummed out about it as he was on stage talking about the game. And, with the leaks that happened with The Last of Us 2, which, of course, was a different issue, but like, feels like a big bummer for that studio for these announcements and these things to happen. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I'm within arm reach of a signed copy of the PlayStation 3 version that has so many folks that worked on it, and Ashley and Troy's signature of when it first launched. And like you said, working on the podcast. So people listening that didn't know that, consider everything I'm saying very biased and jaded. I will say, though, I am angry that they finished filming the TV show and I was never called up to be a clicker. Like, I'm ready for it. I would have knocked it out of the park. I would have
been clicking your whole life.
Yes, thank you. I would have looked down the barrel of the lens and been like, I'm a clicker.
That classic line that you get in the game with all the clickers when they turn and look right at the camera and they're like, I'm a clicker.
Click, click. Click, 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 click. I'm a clicker, which would have become my catchphrase. Like it's Morbin time. It's clicking time, baby. Fans would have loved it. They would have re-released it yet again. I'm very excited.
I'm shocked you didn't get the job, Christian. Shocked.
Well, I self-taped. They didn't have asked me to.
You were like, click, click.
I had a whole catchphrase and it was like, click, click, mother. Just like everything was there. It all worked. I was eating mushrooms. I think I ate the wrong type because I had a wild day. But it was all in good fun. I'm very excited for this. Like, this has been long rumored, but to actually see it, I think the things that excite me the most about it are the price point. No, not the accessibility features and what they're adding to the game to modernize it. Because I think of the three of us, I'm probably the person who has played the first one most recently again. And it shows its age. It is a 10-year-old game. And I think it's easy for us to sit here and say, why are they going to remake it? Well, people now could have that same experience I had with my daughter, who's now almost 10, playing it as they've become a parent. It's been a decade, a generation, and in many ways has two console generations, right, have passed since that game, we're in the second one, has come out. So I think that's awesome. I think it's great. And I think adding that accessibility and doing a bigger take on it is very attractive. I'm a super fan of the game and of the franchise. So I'm in. I think the thing that bums me out about it is the remaster. The remaster feels like the superfluous version of this game that didn't necessarily need to exist. Mm-hmm. Going this full remake route, whilst obviously being truthful to the game and the story that they're telling, seems like the version, Jeff, that you and I talk about on this show of what we want to see of these older games.
Yeah.
And I think had there not been that remaster, whatever it was a couple of years ago, this would feel bigger and more important. But you texted me something that I will let you say. I don't want to steal it if you're going to say it, but about where we think this game should be in terms of like a release and a price point. And I wholeheartedly agree. I will co-sign.
That. Yeah, what I texted Christian was, this should be a PlayStation Plus Extreme pack-in game. Mm-hmm. It should be the thing that you get when you sign up for PlayStation Plus Extreme. I get that they're going to be able to sell these things at $70, and I'm sure that's going to make them a heck of a lot more money. But it feels like this would be an awesome,
day one.
Yeah, it would have been a great day one kind of Game Pass-esque motivator for getting people to sign up for that service. And I'm actually surprised that's not what's happening, right? I feel like that would have been amazing. Like, hey, You can buy it in the store for $70, or you can sign up for the highest tier of the new PlayStation Plus and just get it as part of your subscription. I think would have been a very compelling motivator for people to sign up, but
maybe the multiplayer game will be that, right? Maybe the faction spin-off thing will be that free-to-play take on this, or free with Plus. But I agree, this included, especially with it launches the 13th, right? The new PlayStation Plus. Mm-hmm. So you say, like, this isn't coming till September, but it launches 23rd or the 13th or whenever it is, 15th, sometime very soon. You get all these great games, and then coming in September, you know, relive the best game in a generation or whatever.
Yeah, in a whole new way. Yeah, I feel like that's a great marketing message. But Lana, I don't know how big of a fan of Last of Us you are, but I'd love to get your reaction to the standalone multiplayer game, which is evidently coming sometime next year. Mm. What do you think of that? As somebody who has tons of friends.
I definitely have some thoughts on it. And I've never played Last of Us or Last of Us 2.
You've never played either of them?
No, I never have.
Do you have any desire to play them?
Yeah, I really do. And when I finally had a device so I could play the games, I had a friend gift me both copies, but then it was like mid-pandemic and I'm like, I can't deal with this emotionally. Yeah, and so I haven't played it yet.
But now you can wait till the remake comes out.
Exactly.
Also PC, we should say.
PC.
Yeah. One person yelling. It's not strictly PlayStation 5. It's a PC in development, but with no release date attached.
I definitely plan on playing the games. I am a big fan of Naughty Dog. Like, I loved the Uncharted series. I mean, anybody who's ever heard me speak ever has heard me talk about my love for Jack and Daxter. I don't have to get into it, but I love it. But the multiplayer I find very interesting, especially as a standalone game, because it's Naughty Dog. As a standalone game, I mean, there's two sort of avenues. One is more cynical and one is less cynical. This more cynical one is, okay, this is a standalone game because they see the success of The Last of Us. They know how resonant it is thematically and how much these characters have impacted people's lives. And they're like, you know, this was just going to be a mode, but you know what? Sell it. We get that money. Right. And the more interesting part is that they've seen the potential of what they're working on. And they thought there's too much here for it to just be a mode or just be a small little thing that we add in. And so we are building this out into a multiplayer experience. I'm hopeful that it is the latter. The thing I find very interesting about that is that Naughty Dog, other than, I mean, Christian, you'd probably know better than I would, other than like Uncharted, like Deathmatch, like play as Nathan or Sully, whatever, run around in the worlds, like gun each other down, multiplayer. I don't think of them as like, oh, the multiplayer studio. A lot of multiplayer experience, building compelling multiplayer experiences. And so if it is that it is too much for one game, I am very curious to see how they would be expanding this into a standalone experience and how they would be translating their narrative experience into something that can feel as fun and fast-paced and ideally deep as multiplayer experiences often ask for.
Yeah, I mean, he explicitly said that it's as big or bigger than one of our single-player games, and he said it has a story. So yeah, those are huge question marks. Like, what does that mean exactly? What do those two data points mean as far as big, big in terms of just sort of the size of the game world, or big in terms of the amount of content to play through, does it, and what is that, how do you tell a story, a Naughty Dog style story in the context of a multiplayer game? I'm very curious to see the answers to those questions.
That's also interesting that he said that. A full disclosure, I thought they were just going to talk about the remake, and I got up to take a pee-pee when he started talking about it.
There you go.
So he didn't. Missed that part.
No, it's, yeah, I think that's, I think it's an interesting facet of it. And we'll see how that shapes up. A lot of Last of Us stuff. And interesting also, he mentioned that Naughty Dog has, been able to spin up multiple projects, and they're doing all kinds of different stuff at the studio, and he's working on his next game. And so
as long as I get to play as a character whose catchphrase is click, click, baby, I'm
a clicker. You're like,
one of them is a comedy game about, Charlie.
That would be so rad to be able to play as a clicker who could just get guns and be like, click, click.
always has an empty clip, so it's just click, click, get it, clicker, and then you get to run around. I think a standalone multiplayer is the way to go. I think because factions is great. It is weird that that's. I'm pretty sure, and I read Naughty Dog's post about it as well. It seems like the remake does not include factions, which is a little bit of a bummer because factions was part of the first Last of Us and was fantastic. And I think Uncharted's multiplayer was really fun as well. I think that largely now big supposed to have legs multiplayer works better as a standalone thing than as attached to a game. And I think Fortnite proved that out. Halo did it as well, you know, where the multiplayer was its own thing. And I think that way you can get separate from the releases if you need to. And then maybe when the Uncharted game comes out or whatever their next game, maybe there's a character that they can include in this. You know, I think we've seen that in a lot of franchises where they've broken out the multiplayer away from the thing. Whereas before, 20 years ago, it was often the back of the box would be, 10-hour single player, multiplayer,
right?
All this other stuff, and now it's very much its own thing. So that has me excited to see what they do. I hope the story isn't just survive the fog's rolling in.
Yeah,
you know, see who can live the longest.
You hope that there's something more to it. Go ahead, Lana.
I mean, obviously, I haven't played the games, but I did see like the initial gameplay showcase for Last of Us 2. Of Ellie like sneaking around like under cars, and there's all those people and like some kind of like team-based infiltration game, like whether it's like a sneaky like capture the flag style thing or I think that would be really
you have to
interesting
find scissor parts.
I don't know the gameplay that well, but like what I see,
that's
like,
there's a lot of scissor parts in the Last of Us universe.
I was also up to play one half of a scissor. I did not get it. I was going to be the top blade. I was in a drawer. I, again, self-taped for it. And I was like, I'm in a drawer.
Man. Scissors don't hold up in the future, huh, Scotch?
The problem with your scissor audition is you were like, click, click. Like, that's all wrong like, for the scissors.
The line is actually snip, snip, sir. We could get you to leave, please.
You named it. I was a comic book. I was a trading card. I was just in a corner, and I was like, click, click. And then they were like, trading cards don't talk.
All wrong, sir. All wrong. Next. Well, I think overall, I got to say.
Click, click.
Got to say click, click. It was a little bit of a disappointing showing for the kickoff of Summer Games Fest. I mean, there's lots more events happening all week. We'll talk about them on the main program, the flagship program. That we'll record Monday morning. So a little bit late on the release of that. If you're used to our Sunday night releases, it'll be just a little later. But I think there's tons of stuff here. There's tons of stuff here. I just don't think it was presented in a way that got me super amped in the way that E3 used to. And that's a bit of a bummer, but.
We didn't talk about the biggest release of the week. The biggest release.
The new shirts at the merch store. That's our release. So we got a new shirt. Christian, you want to tell them about it? It's your baby.
JP Kuvert designed it. First released several years. It's a remaster, Jeff. It's what it is.
It really is.
Remake. It's a remake.
Added a couple more threads. We into the original
redesigned
shirts.
It from the ground up, and by that I mean we also put it on the shirt.
Yeah, we also it's on a new shirt, but it's the summer. Play games, be nice, popsicle t-shirt. That is such a wonderful, reminiscent of those Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, ice cream pops that you would get as a kid. And like, you'd see the picture, like, I want that one. And then you'd get it. And like Michelangelo, it looked more like Swamp Thing.
Sonic, the Sonic Crusader. One with the eye that just goes,
Yeah, it's like Sonic before they took the movie back and redid the character.
Ugly Sonic. It's Ugly Sonic.
Ugly Sonic. But those shirts are available on our shop now, which, are grateful DLC for the swag. Easy URL.
Sorry.
DLCswag.com. You can check those out. And the perfect shirt that will not live up to expectations.
That's right.
Wow.
Before we go.
Summer of Games.
Before
Summer of
we
games.
Wrap up. That's how it goes. I do want to shout out one last thing from the presentation, which is the Cuphead DLC, which is called Delicious Last Course. they stole my shtick, and they will be hearing from my lawyers. Unfortunately, my lawyer is Christian, who is no longer practicing, but they will be hearing from my lawyer the using words to make up the DLC is something that I've been doing for over 400 episodes. Trademarked DLC podcast, Cuphead Delicious Last Course, will be hearing from our lawyers. And on that note,
Jeff, we lost. I heard back that the judge threw it out with prejudice.
What? With prejudice?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't agree with prejudice at all in any form.
We do owe their attorney's fees, though. So go buy those shirts.
Please buy our shirts. DLCswag.com. DLC, which stands for Dude Lost the Case.
You're so proud.
All right. Thank you, patrons. Yeah. Patreon. If you want to hear more nonsense like this in the it's a much more casual show, the midweek show, the this version of the show, the paid DLC show, become a patron. Patreon.com/DLCpod. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Take care.